This episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you by the voice inside of you that says, maybe sure. Another encounter from me, your friendly furry fellow from Oakland, California. Oh, he ain't that son of a paralegal. Yes, he is. He's not that man walking confidently down the street with bird shit on him like he's a rat-ass Radagast. Oh, yes, friends, it is yet another edition of the Justin Robert Young Podcast. My name is indeed all three. I went three for three. I'm both Justin and Robert and Young. It's our little Sunday ritual. It's what we do. We get together, me and you. We hang out. We chat about things. And I'm going to let you know. If you guys have not been able to tell already, my voice is on its last legs. I've had a bit of a fear that my voice, I've been putting a little bit too many miles on it. I have a lot of talking that I do in my life, not only for the podcasting, but also kind of the Go Game performances that we put on. And especially when you get sick, which is what I've been for the last 48 hours, it's a problem. The voice is the first, you always hurt the ones you love. I love to talk. And so my voice is a pile of hot shit right now. So there's a chance I might fucking ride it till the wheels fall off. Hey. Talk shit every day. And I might just end this wheezing. It might just end with me saying, please don't die. Might end like that. You don't know. You don't know until we do it. We're going to do it. We have a whole shit ton of stuff to talk about. I'm going to talk about this wrestling show I went to, Hood Slam. I loved it. It's so rad. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why my beard. I almost shaved my beard. And it's because of you. Yes, you. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you better fucking listen up because I'm going to clue you in. I'm going to talk about some deep, we're going to go way deep into my ego. We're going to open up the little padlock. The code is 12345, the kind of code an idiot puts on his luggage. We're going to crawl down the little stairwell, and we're going to delve into some raw emotion from your pal, Justin Robert Rubles III. And of course, we're going to end things on a high note about Christmas and why I love Christmas trees. All that in your emails. But let's get into talking about this thing I did. All right, so I'm not going to make this long. I just want to shout them out because I think creative people doing creative things need to be rewarded. And I went to a wrestling show called Hood Slam on Friday. Oddly enough, it was my lovely, talented, intelligent, beautiful, and caring fiancée, Ashley Paramore's idea to go to this wrestling show. It takes place in Oakland. It's called Hood Slam. If you are into wrestling, for which I know many of you are, because we do these wrestling live streams, so I'm sure there's a lot of people that are into that, that are listening. It is an indie wrestling thing, not unlike Chikara, Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor is probably a mid-major at this point, but like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. In fact, I would probably compare it on most with Chikara. But because it's California, it'll get lumped in with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, where apparently I was talking to David Majors this morning, Lucha Vavoom or something. That's like a burlesque slash wrestling thing. This was a straight-out wrestling show. A bunch of motherfuckers came out. They had matches. But here's what I liked about it. Is I've seen I've seen enough Chikara. If you're not familiar, I'm going to go a little fucking wrestling nerd on y'all, so fucking buckle up. Chikara is a promotion out of Philadelphia that is great, and the wrestling's very good, but it's a little dense. They have all their own characters, and it has this very, very deep mythology. And if you just kind of come to one show or just watch one pay-per-view and you don't have somebody who's your guide holding your hand and explaining why there's 9 ants wrestling and why everybody just yelled and screamed because somebody came from another dimension, then it's a little hard to follow, right? You have no idea what the fuck's going on. Similarly, you got all these other major or mid-majors or indies like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, where you got insane in-ring talent. These guys are the people very often that you see in WWE, in the majors, if you will. But they don't exactly run their own programs. You know, something that happens 1 month on Pro Wrestling Guerrilla doesn't necessarily have any bearing, except for general, I'm a good guy, I'm a bad guy stuff, on the next episode or the next time that everybody gets together. Great shows all together for both of them. I loved Hood Slam because it gave me a little bit of both. It was fantastic work in the ring with a lot of very digestible and accessible, super fun, creative stuff. There's a reason why they've gotten covered by Los Angeles Today, Vice, Al Jazeera was there shooting shit. It was excellent. And I want to give a big fat shout out to Hood Slam. And just say I loved it. So let me give you guys a little explainer. Why should you give a fuck? What was so rad about it? Stop sucking their ass for 5 seconds, jury, and give us a good fucking rundown of something that we would like to see. Okay, he said defensively. I will let you know what you would want to see if you were there. How about this? Nerds. You want to watch fucking Link, the hero of Hyrule, wrestle? Not one, not two, but 3 matches? Oh, that's what I saw on Friday. That motherfucker won the Hood Fighter Tournament, a one night only single elimination tournament that fucking saw him the victor. Here's a fun note about that. So I recorded. Also, they don't have any... any space between you and the ring, you literally just walk into this, it's an opera house, which is a fun way of saying a warehouse, and you just walk up to the ring. There's no barrier. So, like, Ashley was resting her drink on the fucking mat of the wrestling ring. Somebody got slammed into the mat. She spills her fucking drink right into the wrestling ring. That's how on top of everything you are. So if you go to my Instagram, Instagram.com/JustinRYoung, you're going to see a slow motion video I got of Link doing what is called a standing shooting star press. That's a fancy word. Here's a not fancy word for it. He stood still and did a flip in one place and then landed on his stomach on somebody else. Carl Phone says, did they use Zelda sound effects? You're good goddamn right they did. You're good goddamn right. Let me find the sound effect. Three times does he wrestle, and three times does he go to a treasure chest to find something in it to help him win the match. And each time, they actually had even the better sound effect than I do. They had the... And each time he pulls up, note! First match, it was a power gauntlet. He was able to do a fucking tremendous maneuver. What a maneuver! He was able to lift this dude up on his shoulders. For wrestling fans out there, it was a parody of the Steiner Brothers called the Stoner Brothers, and their valet slash cheerleader was Missy High as Shit, which, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, I'm sorry. Second match, he's about to open it, and he gets fucking powerbombed onto it and almost pinned to lose. Third one, it's... And he pulls out a gigantic bottle of red potion, which looks like Johnny Walker red whiskey. Hilarious. Chugs it, wins the match. Awesome time. So I'm having, I'm just on cloud nine. I'm posting on my Instagram all these pictures and videos I took during the show. And, I put one of Link doing this slow motion shooting star press, which from my money is one of the most impressive and athletic moves in wrestling that enough people do now that it doesn't seem impressive or as impressive as it used to when not everybody in wrestling used to be a gymnast. So, to be fair, he doesn't exactly hit it like he wanted to. Normally, you land belly to belly. He lands more with his knees in his opponent's face. So somebody on my Instagram writes, he botched the move. Botch is wrestling for he didn't do the move right. All of a sudden today, I'm looking at my phone and I see fucking Hero of Hyrule on Instagram getting into a fight with the dude who said that he botched the fucking move. Hero underscore of underscore Hyrule. Link. Fucking the owner of the Triforce. All three of them. Fucking is getting into a fucking Instagram comment war on my fucking video. This is why wrestling's rad. This is why you need to go to Hood Slam. And to that point, that is why this is real. We will be right back with all sorts of crazy ass shit. Here's some songs. All right, Carl Phone says, Jury, I'm curious, why doesn't this series at least have an internet network? Well, you know, what I assume you're asking is why Hood Slam isn't just available somewhere where I can say, hey, every week, go ahead and tune into Hood Slam. Because a lot of the ways that these companies make money is by selling DVDs. So if you want to watch Hood Slam, then you can buy the DVD of the show they do each month. Or, and this is probably the better answer is it's up somewhere. It just might not be super accessible. Here's something that I've come to learn, getting more and more into wrestling, is that a lot of indie promotions are a lot of things. They can be great talent managers. They can be great at shaping the creative content. They can be great at attendance and fan management, but very rarely are they great at editing and presenting things to mainstream audiences. It's just not a strong suit. So search out all the Hood Slam you can and engage in it. I'm going to be there every month, man. I dug the shit out of it. By the way, the music we're going to be playing is from your friend of mine, Neshcom. That dude has a record label. It's called Crystal Shadow Music. And on that, he's got this new act. It's called Come to Brazil. Let's get a little bit more of that. I really dig it. I think it's pretty rad. And it's available now. Let me see. Well, anyway, you can search Crystal Shadow Music or Come to Brazil on YouTube. Go buy shit. It'll be rad. I almost shaved my beard. I almost shaved it. I got it trimmed. I got a haircut and a beard trim, but I was tired of it. I was tired, sick, and tired of it. It is something that I smile at the face of, and yet I have increasingly found myself loathing. Not enjoying it at all, friends. Here's what it is. I shake someone's hand. I give somebody that I have known and love a hug. And they say, "Oh man, that beard. You look like a terrorist." Now, it would be hilariously hypocritical of me to get butthurt and upset when somebody made fun of me. Because so much of my life is spent making fun of people. It's what I find myself doing. It is my personality that is dialed up from an internet perspective to a larger degree, an amplified degree, so entertainment can be made. So it would be dumb of me to be like, "Oh my God, people are calling me a terrorist because of my beard. I'm so fucking hurt by it." So I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it was something that it doesn't, after a while, it's like, number one, it's repetition. There's nothing else but terrorist, right? And number two, it's a fairly ugly thing to be called. And, like, racist? I mean, like, lowercase r racist? Racist in 5-point font racist? Racist italicized question mark? Racist? Maybe? I had the same thing when I had this mustache. I have a mustache and people say, "Oh, you look like a child rapist." There's a child rapist, a terrorist. Is there no other place between those two where we are now? "Hey, I like your beard," or "I think your beard looks terrible," and "you're a child raping terrorist." Or if it wasn't child rapists, it'd be like, "Oh, you think you should have a van," which the dot, dot, dot to that is where you rape people, right? And in understanding and searching my own feelings about this, I came to have a deep well of empathy. I came to understand, if even just for a fleeting moment, the life of an actual Arab dude with a beard. Like, cause if I get it and I only look Arab-ish, you know, I look Arab-esque, Arab adjacent. If I get it, then you better goddamn believe there are a million motherfucking Mohammeds that get you look like a terrorist every motherfucking day of their lives. And I'm not even talking about the motherfuckers who are doing it for religious reasons, just because they want to sport a beard. Because let's get it fucking right, okay? A lot of these motherfuckers that are out here calling anybody with a beard a terrorist or calling anybody with a mustache a child molester are fucking straight out, up and down, black and white, jealous. Jealous. That's what they are. Absolutely. No doubt. There's a lot of motherfuckers out here that I see in different conversations that say, oh man, I wish I could grow a beard. When I fucking try to leave the hair alone on my face, I turn into Patches McGirt. If I ran for president, I would be President Patches of the McGirt family. Of the Connecticut McGirts? Yes, the very same. Meanwhile, I'm rolling out here like I got fucking testosterone turned up to 10. Tons of facial hair. I gotta sculpt it like it's a topiary. And that's where I think a lot of this comes from. Straight out jealousy. And that's where I was sitting in that barber chair when I was about to say, you want to know what? Just fucking shave the whole goddamn thing. I was pulled back from the brink. Pulled back from the very, very edge of smooth cheek fucking nothingness, of oblivion on my face by just saying, you want to know what? I'm going to do it in spite of them. Every time somebody says, Justin, your beard makes you look like you're a terrorist, I feel like I just want to look them right in the eyes and say, yes, I am. I'm a terrorist. I don't know. Maybe that's too harsh. Maybe, I don't know. You guys let me know. Let me know in the email, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put Jerry in the subject line. What should my response be? Because that's, I guess, what I need. I need help from you guys. I need help from the Jerry podcast listening public to let me know what my comeback should be. Cause it is very rare that I am left without words. You guys know this, but this is one of those situations. I need your help. We're going to go more into my mind. If you thought that this was a self-introspective episode, you better fucking buckle your shit up because we are going fucking even deeper into the mind of Justin Robert Young coming up next.
Rolling on the dish, we grab you to this. And that's terrible.
We have a new album coming out on December 16th, me and Brian Brushwood. So if you're listening to this show, you probably know that I also do a show called Night Attack. On that show called Night Attack, me and Brian Brushwood talk about a bunch of, funny stuff. Over the last year, we've been recording and compiling material for our third full studio album. It is called Night Attack, Too Old to Talk. It will be available for you on Amazon and iTunes December 16th. But me and Brian got into this conversation the other day. Well, maybe I'll tell you what. Maybe I can also play this. I don't know whether this is appropriate to play, but I'm 50% of this show, and I'm going to fucking do it anyway. Hold on, wait. Let's go ahead and stop that. All right, here we go.
Dance, magic man!
All right, hold on. All right, all right. That was very aggressive,
right? Because it's not awkward enough. Is what it actually is. Oh, swear, I will give $100 to anyone who.
And he just says with a confidence and volume that is completely inappropriate for the statement he is about to say. What the fuck?
It was obvious pandering.
All right, well, fucking prove it. I'll fight him. So we're living in effectively a post-apocalyptic world.
Yes, right? Yes. Thug lifestyle.
What?
How chubbed up are you?
All right, fuck it. Oh, my God. You just fucking cracked the code, Brian.
Hold on. That's not exactly where I was going with this.
You are now thrust in.
This is Hollywood as fuck right now.
Great job. Yeah. Surprise! Do you want to know what was on there?
What?
You're my...
Like, no. You need to record that shit.
Like, you see the cursor click back and then delete it.
Hey.
I've got some very serious questions about...
Oh, yes.
Whereas...
Here's the other thing. Oh, God.
Really? I'm telling you. Seems inappropriate. How about you get your fat girlfriend up here?
Motherfucker! Are you kidding me?
Rad as fuck. All right. So I understand that's a little bit out of context. That is a trailer from the album. All that stuff is stuff from the album. Obviously, listen, man, we're playing to our constituency. If we are releasing a trailer with literally no punchlines, it is just all setups and then reactions to those setups. That was the work of the great Neshcom who actually edited the album this time around. He did a great job on it. So here we go. December 16th, you'll be able to buy it, and we're going to have a special episode of the show, the Night Attack show. That's a Tuesday, where me and Brian will be joined by Veronica and Chad, as well as Bonnie, who are all on the album as well. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about this conversation Brian and I had where we were talking about at what point are we a comedy team? And I'm realizing now as I say it that might come off weird to you guys because you listen to us, right? And you listen to me. And I don't know if you guys think of me as a comedian or Brian and I as a comic duo, but I can tell you with almost 100% certainty that we don't, or at least we don't look at it. I mean, I think we understand that we try to make people laugh, but I don't feel like either of us would want to put ourselves in, you know, amongst other people who would be, you know, we're not the Smothers Brothers, right? You know, we're not Cheech and Chong. We don't do sketch comedy. We're not both stand-ups that are doing some kind of riffy stand-up thing together. Yeah, we're not a Dead Man Inc. We're not Mitchell and Webb. Of course, the UK viewer immediately makes himself known by talking about a specifically UK comic duo. We are not, who's the other? A Bit of Fry and Laurie. We're not fucking Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie either. So I don't know. I mean, MEK says, or Mech says, it's more like Click and Clack, who were comic, I mean, I guess where they were comedic, but by and large, they dispensed car advice. We don't do anything but dispense horse shit. I guess we did call ourselves the CNN of horse shit the other day, so maybe that makes sense. But, and here's where it gets really personal. There was a point, I mean, the first half of my 20s were spent building what I believe to be a career as a comedian. I did a little bit of stand-up. I was primarily in a sketch comedy group. I wrote sketch comedy. I performed sketch comedy on stage. And I looked around the scene that I was in, and I thought, these are all motherfuckers who are going to be doing comedy forever. And then that stopped. You know, if you want to go back and listen to an old episode of the Jury Podcast, I did an interview with my buddy Jake Goldman where I talked about getting kicked out of this comedy troupe. And that pretty much, for me, put the brakes on, like, do I think I'm a comedian? I thought that was it, you know? Now, I kept doing funny stuff, but I guess, you know, now I find myself in a position where it's like, well, I mean, am I? If I'm introducing myself to people, do I say that this is what I do? You know, that seems weird. Yet at the same time, if this album goes as well as the last two did, Night Attack 2 and Night Attack Live, then it will be the third album in a row that will debut at number one on the Billboard comedy charts. And, like, you would assume that comedians, that's something that comedians do, right? Like, having an album on the Billboard comedy charts, let alone having it appear at number one, that would certainly seem like that. So now I have to go back and try to think to myself, like, fuck, was that too harsh of me to think of myself as having failed in that mission? Was that too preemptive of me to say, well, like, I tried to do something and it didn't work out, so now I'm going to bury that dream in the backyard of my brain? Maybe. But then again, who makes that decision? Does the government just fucking send me a license that says, congratulations, in fucking hobo font, you're a comedian? And then I get a laminated card. And then if I go to a Louis C.K. show, I can flash him my card and he flashes me his card. And then we high five as we walk by because we both know that we're in the club. I don't think that's how it works. Maybe it is, though. And by the way, this is in no way a conversation that I think is happening outside my head. I feel like there is one person in the world having this conversation, and he's having it with himself. And his name is Justin Robert Young - Anzalone. And this is something that is there anybody out there that has had a situation like this where you kind of gave up on something and then found your way back to it? Because at this point, it's not like I just got really good at gardening. I feel like if I just got really good at gardening, I would just be like, yo, I'm a gardener, bitch. Fucking suck on this green thumb. Ashley just said that's weird to me yelling suck on my green thumb. But it's because I don't have anything invested in that. I don't have anything invested in gardening. Comedy's a different story. Comedy caused me a lot of pain. I put all my eggs in the comedy basket and then fucking watched them crash to the ground. And then had to come up with a new metaphor because all my eggs were gone. Fuck, what else am I going to do? I don't know. Come up with a new metaphor for eggs. Or just go get more eggs. I mean, they're pretty cheap. But now what is it? You know? Like, is this me scoring points on the wreckage of the old thing? Or is that unhealthy? Should I focus on whatever's happening now? I mean, I guess I am. It's just this is you know, an introspective look back. No, Frack says, is Kevin Rose not an entrepreneur because Dig fell apart? No, but Kevin Rose kept being an entrepreneur. You know, Kevin Rose had Dig fall apart and then did Milk or Milkshake or whatever and did other stuff and continues to do other stuff and works at Google, giving money to people and apps. You know, when I got kicked out of that group, man, like, that was it. That was my worldview. And by the way, it did not help that, I mean, you know, I was in the New York City sketch comedy scene in the years 2003 to 2005. Let me give you a couple names that, like, I did one show with the Wicked Wicked Hammercats of NYU that featured DC Pearson and Donald Glover. I went to go see Aziz Ansari Punched a Wall, which if it wasn't his first one-man show, it had to be a second or third at UCB New York. And these were people that, you know, I wasn't necessarily friendly with, and I'm sure they wouldn't know me from a fucking hole in the wall. But, like, they weren't far away. It wasn't like they were untouchable gods. And now they're gigantic, you know? And when I got sucker punched like that, you know, and the people that I creatively kind of trusted the most turned their back on me, it was hard to go back and say, but no, I'm talented. No, I'm really talented. You know, it was definitive. It was final. You're done. You're not good at this. Now, in hindsight, I can go back and see that it was a lot of personality stuff. And you know, some of the stuff I wrote wasn't great. Some of it was good. And it wasn't necessarily, it was a vote about me as who I was as a person. Their vote was me who I was as a person and not me, the artistic entity. But still, man, you carry those scars. There's some scars you carry for a while, and that was certainly one of them for me. And now, as I kind of get reflective about how far we've come with Night Attack, not only as a podcast, but as a comedy album franchise, it's really hard. It's hard to just say, well, obviously, this is who I am. It's hard for me to connect those two. Because I feel like me now, if I went back in time and I dressed like Doc Brown, because I would have to disguise myself from myself, and I went to me, who had just performed at the People's Improv Theater in New York City, Manhattan, and had just gotten a run. Our group, Cleanest River in America, had just gotten a month-long run at the People's Improv Theater on the basis of an audition show that went exceptionally well. And I went and told me that, hey, in 10 years or less than 10 years, you're going to have a podcast that'll pay you X, a comedy podcast that'll pay you X, and some comedy albums that'll pay you Y, or and bring you Y notoriety on the Billboard charts. I would have been thrilled. It would have been, I would have said my dreams had come true. And that ignores the decade of me, of it going as bad as it can go right after that. It was in the first rehearsal for those that month-long run of shows that I got kicked out of the group. And everything in between. Of me thinking that that was it. There wasn't, you know, that I wasn't worth it. I couldn't cut it. My shit wasn't good enough. I guess that's interesting. It's like one of those Mad Magazine pictures where, you know, it's one picture when you have it out there, but you fold it in half and then put them together and it's a whole nother picture. I guess it's kind of poetic when you look at it like that. Where me and him, you know, me and myself in 2004, we're just at other ends of the valley, kind of waving at each other. But I'm glad I'm on this end. Because that motherfucker has no idea what he's in for. He is going to really be a miserable pile of shit for a little bit. Woo! That fall down the valley, man, that was not pretty. We'll be back with your emails. This is again Neshcom. This is remix of Come to Brazil Super Villainy. You can find it on Bandcamp, iTunes, and oh so much more. Emails come in to justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line and we will read them. Teddy writes, thank you. You saved my life. I chugged water all throughout the day. Then I drank more than a human being should. This morning, I popped up like a daisy. Actually, I may still be drunk. To be determined. Thanks anyway. And that showed up Sunday morning. So he definitely wrote it after a night of drinking on a Saturday. Thank you very much for listening, Teddy. Shiflock says, you mentioned in the old days a gentleman would show a girl he cared by putting his jacket in the mud. By that, do you mean fucking her in the ass without a condom? I mean, different strokes, bro. Different strokes. I asked my audience, y'all out there, whether or not, how you felt, if you were indeed a conservative, how you felt being in a sphere that we can describe as the nerd sphere that very often has people tilt fairly violently left. Zero writes, conservative is a strange word for me. Definitions don't help that much considering how things were given in a political or financial standpoint. Conservative means holding to traditional attitudes and values and cautious about change or innovation, typically in relation to politics or religion. I am quite cautious about change and extreme measures, but minor ones don't bother me. I enjoy seeing shit remaining stable and not getting out of hand as the trickle-down effect bothers me beyond understanding. Library internet is free, so even those of us with next to nothing can still get by and listen and enjoy your views. Keep up the great work. Carry on. I'm so glad I'm able to share my experiences. My situation has improved more or less because my wife has finally found work, but the transition is the same. With or without money, I am finding my views to be conservative. It means as a business owner, my business just happens to be surviving. That's a lot of epic shit right there, dude. Robodashi, in addition to the question, when should you tell people you love them? I'd say whenever you know for sure that you feel like that, even if it's not reciprocated. Word it in a way that doesn't come on too strong, but still lets them know how you feel. I held on to these feelings for so long. I think that's part of what fucked it all up for me. Oh, this is the guy who wrote in with his situation where he kind of poured his heart out and it did not go so well. To answer your question, when should you ask someone out on a date? I'd say if you've been hanging out anyway and you have a good connection, go for it. If you get shut down or friend zoned or whatever, at least you know where you stand. Man, I hate the term friend zone. I just think it's, I mean, like, I'm not saying that that it doesn't exist, right? But man, like, if not being able to go on a romantic date with the woman you like is not getting $100, staying friends with them is like 75. It's like 75% of it. And that is, maybe that's just the definition of maturity. You just got to realize exactly how valuable that is. Jonathan writes, in my experience, people to the left feel more comfortable sharing disdain for those on the right via social media. We're going to let everybody know that this is Jonathan's point of view and he's allowed to have it. I know that I'm going to get a million people saying that people on the right are more mean than people on the left. Let's all understand that that's just what happens. He continues, I think because it feels like a safe space with their quote-unquote kind of people around. I think they also tend to think in sides of disagreement as good versus evil. Disagree with higher taxes, evil stance, motivated by your love of mammon. Disagree with solar energy is the right path forward, an evil stance, probably funded by the Koch brothers and your hatred for Bambi. In contrast, those on the right take ridiculous umbrage to people saying standardly dumb things. Quote, oh no, John Stewart said something mean about Republicans, end quote, and choose terrible hills to die on for principle. Quote, by God, if we let these liberal teachers have our kids read nickel and dime, the whole country's finished, end quote. Everything's a slippery slope to hell for conservatives, it seems. Everyone's got their own neuroses, I suppose. Jonathan, I'd agree that I probably read more shit talked about conservatives, but I guess it's probably because I hang around more liberals. And I guess that's Jonathan's point, too. John, not Jonathan, but John, writes, I'm here to answer your call for conservatives who feel their beliefs clash with the norm in the circles they hang out. Being a white male Christian conservative from Arizona that was homeschooled K through 12, I think I have the market cornered on unpopular backgrounds to have on the internet. The king of unpopular backgrounds approaches. Oye, oye, he continues. Most of the time, these types of topics come up, I just let it slide. But if brought up in a non-confrontational way, I'm willing to discuss controversial issues. I have gay co-workers, but arguing with them about gay marriage doesn't help anyone. Or maybe I'm a pushover. I don't know. I feel that while growing up, I may have been overly critical of those that didn't share my opinion, basically just fanboying out about random things. Over the years, I've become more respectful of other people's views. They aren't wrong and stubborn about it. They genuinely see the world differently than I do. I may still disagree with their opinions, but I'm learning to let my friendships be defined by the things we agree on instead of the things we don't. The key to debate about topics in order to gain perspective and strength perspective and strengthens friendships instead of being the winner. Now that is a fuck of an email, man. John, you get the fucking
national coalition we built. Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt. Speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick.
You get the Joe Biden quote of the night. No Frack writes, thanks for reading my note last week. I really enjoy your take as always. In answer to your question, yes, when people find out you're a social conservative, they do often look at you like you're sprouting a third eye. Many liberals and libertarians assume that conservatism sits at the rough intersection of racism, sexism, hatred of the poor, worship of the rich, sexual repression, rejection of science, jingoism, and poor taste. It's not unknown, although really uncommon, for people to exclude anyone found to be conservative from polite society altogether. So when you're in an unpopular group, you can do one of three things. First, you can band together for mutual support. This is common and necessary for many people, but leads easily to groupthink. Second, you can troll, which is ultimately a nasty habit. Trolling is to having a meaningful conversation, what pornography is to sex. Editor's digression. Don't be so hard on pornography. Third, you can engage people. Engaging is tricky because it's easy to slip into arguing because you enjoy it rather than give others a new perspective. You have to pick your battles, know your audience, subvert expectations, point out faulty assumptions, and be friendly while you do it. When I engage, I have the advantage because even or especially educated liberals in America know almost nothing about conservatism. Many think that conservatism came from Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, which makes it incredibly easy to subvert expectations. If I just speak in full sentences through a full set of teeth without a banjo in my hand, I'm ahead of the game. Ultimately, it comes down to whether people are willing to assume you're acting in good faith or not. If not, there's no point to arguing, and as you say, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. If people just want to hate you, it's usually not a great loss. Just don't whine. Ladies and gentlemen. I want to go ahead and give a big fat hairy a round of applause to No Frack. What do you say we both just leave? I want to let everybody know that now is the time to follow your dream. I want to let everybody know that Hood Slam is a really rad way to spend $10 on the first Friday night of every month in Oakland. I want everybody to know that I have a Christmas tree and I cut that segment for time, but I will talk to you all about it next week. I want everybody to know that this sentence about acting in good faith and knowing that you can strengthen your friendships by having discussions with them is the key to life. And folks, if you are at the end of your rope, know that you can email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put Jury in the subject line. Find the podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat is Justin R. Young. And of course, you can always hashtag join the conversation at Diamond Club. .reddit.com. This is your old pal Justin Robert Young letting you know, before and after anything else, please don't